This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U-Mobile.
Good morning, you're listening to The Breakfast Grill. I'm Shazana Mukhtar. Malaysia is home to one of the most biodiverse ecological environments, widely recognized for the richness of flora and fauna species with whom we share the land. In recognition of the value of our natural heritage, the government recently reaffirmed a pledge to maintain 50% forest cover as part of efforts to conserve the environment. But how genuine is our commitment to this? Today on World Wildlife Day, we discuss what's at stake if we don't take our roles as stewards of the earth seriously and what policy measures should be considered in this regard. Joining me are Dr. Lim Teck Win, Adjunct Professor of Ecology at the University of Nottingham, Malaysia, and Managing Director of Rescue, a forestry management consultancy, and Dr. Wong Siew Tee, Founder and CEO of the Bornean Sun Bear Conservation Centre in Sandakan, Sabah. Teck Win, Wong, welcome to the show.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Teck Win, I'd like to start with you. Now, according to official estimates, Malaysia has maintained 55% forest cover so far, in keeping with the pledge that we originally made at Rio de Janeiro in 1992, and also in line with the national forestry policy that was launched last year. However, as optimistic as that statistic sounds, what does that actually mean? Because I don't think it's as simple as just painting half the country green, right?
Right. It's actually a lot more complicated than that. You're right. So the issue is how you define forest cover, what's forest and what's forest cover. If you do an assessment, and there have been some scientists in Singapore that did an assessment in 2010 using satellite images to see how much tree cover there is that matches the original tree cover, the so-called natural forest. That found that Malaysia is only 45% forest cover, and that was in 2010. Now, the reason for the government statistics saying that it's 55 is the way the government determines whether or not an area of forest is based on a legal definition. If the area is zoned as a forest reserve, for example, even if that area doesn't have any trees left on it, it is still considered a forest. And that is this problem with the definition is the source of a lot of conflict between the government and NGOs. Many NGOs have been claiming deforestation, claiming logging. When the government turns around and says, no, there's no deforestation, it's still considered a forest, even though there are no natural forests remaining. As long as it's under tree cover and the forest reserve, it's still considered a forest.
I have a question about the terms forest cover and tree cover. Are they the same thing or are they different?
All right, this is a good point, because you mentioned the Malaysia Forest Policy, which was approved last year, and that says the pledge is 50% forest and tree cover. And so what are trees? Well, trees include rubber trees, maybe even palm oil trees, or even banana trees, perhaps. Unfortunately, the forest policy does not define what is meant by tree cover, and it leaves it open. And therefore, this whole 50% thing is very shaky. If they allow rubber plantations and oil palm to be considered tree cover, then you look at the statistics, we have 73% forest and tree cover.
Okay, so there is a sense, there is the definition or the terms can be a little bit misleading if you don't know what is what. Now, in past conversations, Teck Win, you've enlightened me that the term permanent forest reserve in the Malaysian context doesn't necessarily mean untouched forest or protected forest. What's the highest level of protection for a forest then? And do we know how much of this makes up our forest cover?
Yeah, so we have about 13% of our land area under what are known as totally protected areas. And these include areas such as Tamanagara, wildlife sanctuaries, areas that really cannot be touched at all, like no logging is allowed inside. And so that is the difference between a protected area and a forest reserve. Forest reserves have two broad classes. One is for protection, but the other is also for production, meaning the area is reserved for growing timber, for growing trees.
Wong, I want to bring you into the conversation to help illustrate the biodiversity of wildlife in our forests. So you're the eminent expert on the Malayan sun bear, and sun bears are considered a keystone species. Could you help me understand what that means?
Okay, so well, sun bears are known as a keystone species because the presence of sun bears affect many other wild trees and wild plants, you know, and we know that they play many important ecological roles, such as a seed dispersal. When they eat fruits, they disperse the seed, and therefore the seeds are carried away far away from that mother tree. And that process called seed dispersal is a tree planting process. And many studies have shown that the further away the trees, the seed being carried away from the mother tree, the higher the chances of survival. So in other words, they are tree planters. Sun bears are also known as forest doctor because when they feed on termites, some termite species like the Microcerotermes are known to attack live tree. So when there's a sun bears feeding on this group of termite, is actually control that group of termite population in the forest and preventing many trees from being killed by this termite. Sun bears are also known as forest engineer, you know, when they feed on stingless beehive, stingless bee and honey, and they actually excavate a big hole of the tree, and that cavity is later being used by a nest for hornbills, for example, flying squirrel, for example. So they build nests for other people. They are known as also, they're also known as forest farmers. When they do digging, look for earthworm, they like farmers plowing the soil and losing the soil, and hence the soil nutrient cycle. And also, they're also a food provider. You know, when they feed on termite nests, decay wood, there's always something left behind. And there are many animals like bitter pigs, pheasants, boiling ground cuckoo, and other birds all tagging along the bears. All in all, make sun bears, the presence of sun bear will affect the survival of many wildlife species in the forest. And therefore, they are known as keystone species. When this keystone species has been removed, many other wild plants and wildlife will be affected in the forest ecosystem. So that's what it means.
It's not just one species, the sun bear, that is affected. It's really, it trickles down to a whole bunch of other species and the ecosystem overall. Wong, Tekwin earlier was speaking about forest cover and that only 13% of forests are properly protected. I mean, where can we find sun bears then? Is it only in that 13% of protected forest, or how broad or how wide ranging is their population in Malaysia at the moment?
Okay, so sun bears is a forest dependent species, means that they have to have natural forest. Okay, whether this is a primary forest, whether this is a logwood forest, as long as they are forest, all right? And the forest, you know, they are found, I mean, the prime habitat, of course, would be the lowland dicturca forest, where this forest is the richest in terms of the biodiversity and also the richest in terms of timber production. And then, and sun bears also found on submontane forests up to 2,000 meters. They also found on mangrove forests. They also found on like, swamp forests, limestone forests as well. So these animals are a very robust and very versatile animal, as long as they can find food, you know, because they are generalists, they eat everything that they can find. Mm. So as long as they are good forests, big enough for them to find food and propagate, they are doing well. However, because their reproduction rate is so slow, you know, they cannot withstand any kind of human-caused mortality, let alone this is deforestation. When we clear the forest, when we like, you know, clean up the forest for plantations, for agricultures, for mining or whatever, then that kind of thing will diminish sun bear's population forever. Yeah. And then, and usually this deforestation or logging activities tends to follow with a lot of people moving in to the forested area, and those people during the daytime they do logging, nighttime they do hunting, poaching, you know, and that would means that would threaten the wild bears population in the long run, or literally wipe up the local population. Mm. So they need big forests, small forests, patches of forest patches like the one that we have over here, the Sipilo Forest Reserve, only 4,200 hectares is not enough. From my study, I found out that sun bears, male adult sun bears, need a forest of 2,000 hectares in order for them to survive and propagate. And then they do defense this territory. And female is about 400 to 500 hectares. And then so if you need a healthy populations of sun bears, you need a mixture of quite sufficient populations of male and female. Mm. And in that case, because all of them have their own territory, at the end, you need big forests in order to have a viable population. The keyword here is viable. In the Sepilo, when I started my sun bear conservation center here, we still have wild bears. And right now, no more wild bear in this forest because first, they cannot propagate. The male and the female will not meet each other, or even if they meet each other, there's like hunting and poaching in the forest adjacent. So the keyword for lots of survival of especially large mammal, they need large forest, and the bigger the forest, the better for their survival and the better for their future, so to speak.
I'm speaking to forestry researcher Dr. Lim Tek Quin and wildlife biologist Dr. Wong Siew Tee on World Wildlife Day. We'll have more from this conversation in just a moment. BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
Thanks for staying tuned to the Breakfast Grill. On World Wildlife Day today, I'm speaking to Dr. Lim Tek Quin, Adjunct Professor of Ecology at the University of Nottingham, Malaysia, and Dr. Wong Siew Tee, founder and CEO of the Bornean Sunbear Conservation Centre. Wong is joining us from the Conservation Centre in Sandakan, Sabah, and we may hear some banging in the background. Those are the sunbears playing in their pens. Now, Tek Quin, earlier you spoke about the different classifications and purposes of forests. How do authorities determine what forest land is used for? Do they take into account wildlife population or biodiversity considerations?
Right, the rules are slightly different in each region of Malaysia, but all the three regions do, in theory, need to take into consideration what the condition of the forest is, what species are found, whether it is... We've actually got many different types of forest naturally. You'll probably have heard of mangrove forests and dryland forests, but there's also peat swamp forests and there's montane forests. And so no forest is identical. And so this is an issue propped up recently. Once there are plans to clear a particular forest, the government often says, don't worry, we'll replace it with an equivalent area. But to get to your question, the law does not actually provide guidelines for how they determine whether the area is equivalent, apart from the size of the forest. And so they should be absolutely taking into consideration wildlife concerns and so on. But often it's just due to what is available and no one else wants. So these will be steep areas, the areas on the top of mountains, areas which are not suitable for development rather than areas which are particularly important for conservation.
Mm. Wong, earlier you were talking about how sun bears are affected by deforestation. When they lose that habitat, they can't survive. I want to ask from your perspective, how difficult is it to revive populations of vulnerable species like the sun bear?
Actually, quite difficult. One thing is that, say, for example, sun bears, they don't breed like pigs. Wild boars, bearded pigs, 1 liter you're talking about, can crank it up, 7 or 8 or 9 piglet. And then for all of these large mammals, they all share a very similar characteristic where they have a very slow reproduction rate. A female in her lifetime can only produce up to 3 to 4 cubs in her lifetime. And then in the wild, if they can live for 13, 14 years, that is considered as long. Mm. With this kind of natural birth rate, and then they have to withstand all the natural mortality rate from predations, from competitions, from diseases, lack of food and that kind of thing. So it is actually quite tough. And then if there is any kind of human caused mortality, regardless this is deforestation, regardless this is hunting and poaching, then the population is not viable and easily being wiped out from the surface. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Taekwin, from your work and from your observations, are there any success stories of species that have been revived in Malaysia?
Yeah, there have been some success stories. Unfortunately, I can think of one that jumps out from Sabah, and that's the green turtle off not far from where Wong is on the islands of Sandakan. And that really remarkable. You can go there and you can see them laying eggs and hatching almost every night. And you can contribute to that. Unfortunately, in terms of forest conservation, the story is not so straightforward. There have been certain plant species that have been rescued and are being conserved. And there are definitely efforts by the Wildlife Department to conserve and reintroduce certain species. Unfortunately, those efforts are struggling at the moment. The ones that spring to mind are the rhino the efforts, which unfortunately failed. And now it seems that Indonesia is the only place where the Sumatran rhino is found. Yeah, it's a big challenge. I don't blame the Wildlife Department because ultimately it's land matters that are the prime determinant of many of the fate of these species. But definitely, it's not a good record in Malaysia, unfortunately.
Deforestation harms biodiversity. But what about the flip side? What about reforestation? So last year, along with the Malaysian forest policy, the government announced a plan to plant 100 million trees between 2020 to 2025. Can this be seen as an effective reforestation initiative?
Yeah, I would say that it's a distraction. Planting trees is seldom the answer. This particular program, there are certain times when planting trees can be a benefit. And there are groups such as the Tropical Rainforest Conservation Center that focuses on endangered species of trees. And those efforts, along with efforts such as the Forestry Department and Forest Research Institute to target endangered species, that they're certainly commendable. However, I would say that where we are in Malaysia at the moment, the effort needs to be on conserving the natural habitats rather than planting.
I have something to say. Well, first of all, you need to understand our forests. Our forests, you know, the tropical rainforests of Borneo, Sumatra, and West Malaysia are the oldest rainforests in the world. It takes 140 million years to be what we are seeing today, and then plus the biological diversity of this forest is enormous. And once we destroy it, it'll be gone forever. It takes such a long time to be what they are today, you know, and then by planting 1 million trees, 10 million trees, you're planting trees and you're not creating a real forest. And that is a very, very different thing. And then so for us, I think if we can choose not to lock the forest, we have to protect them as much as possible and find other ways to make money. Yeah, seriously, you know, to improve people's livelihood, to improve, you know, all the Malaysians' livelihood.
I mean, that's the perennial conundrum, right? It's the balancing act between economic and development prerogatives to improve livelihoods and also protecting and conserving the natural environment, which, as you said, Wong, takes millions of years to develop. So I want to relate this to real-life events in Sabah and Sarawak that's happening with regard to the Pan-Borneo Highway. And the development of the highway cuts through the contiguous forest known as the Heart of Borneo. Wong, from your observations, do you think the highway project took adequate measures to mitigate any ecological impact that might happen?
Well, yeah. So this is the problem. A lot of the alignments that they put on where they laid up the Pan-Borneo Highway actually cut through a forest reserve, cut through wildlife reserve and key wildlife habitat. And that is not wise. Okay, that is not wise. Because once you fragmented, I mean, forests in Southeast Asia already being decreased at an alarming rate, you know, and then when this big highway project, I'm not opposing this Pan-Borneo Highway. However, we can do better by putting the strategic alignment so that to reduce the impact to the minimum towards the wildlife or the wild plant, especially when they like cut through key elephant habitats. They cut through the key proboscis monkey habitat and things like that. And then once that kind of developments or infrastructures has been on the ground, people will come in, it will further, you know, fragmented, it will further impact the landscape. And of course, the biggest loser will be our wildlife and wild plants in that area. So alignments, strategic planning is extremely important in the first place.
Yeah. What's preventing developers from taking into account measures to mitigate environmental impact? It seems like a common sense thing to do in order to safeguard long-term interests.
Yeah, I think, you know, here for example, so in Sabah, we've been involving a few stretch of this alignment, and it seems like there's a lack of conversations. There's a lack of understanding with different agencies, yeah, and then with different NGOs or with different experts. You know, so when those JKR, Elpsirium, when they do the alignment, they do not consider a lot of the thing that for an ecologist might consider that is a big no-no, you know. And then I think this kind of thing can improve to reach a win-win situation by having more conversation, especially the inter-agencies conversations. And it should be happening in the first place, you know, the very, very first thing is to get everybody together and then come up with, you know, maybe from the Department of Land and Irrigation have their own concern, the Wildlife Department have their own concern, the Forestry Department have their own concern, the NGO who work for the wildlife have their own concern. So all have to share their informations and share their concern so that the alignment, the layer of the plan will be the most strategic.
There has been considerable progress made on the highway already, especially in Sarawak. Is it too late for mitigation measures?
Yeah, I'm sure some of the highway already too late. You know, once they already cleared, you know, a big chunk of forest, and then all the heavy machinery and some part already being almost completed, then it's definitely too late. And then so say I'm not very familiar with the issue with the situation in Sarawak, but in Sabah there are a few stretches that we think we still can have the hope to change the alignment, and we are in conversation with them.
So I'm slightly more optimistic than Wong in the sense that in Peninsular Malaysia we have many roads that have already been built many years ago, and there's a plan and there has been implementation of wildlife crossings, like retrofitting the highways to put wildlife crossings over existing roads. So while, of course, the damage to the forest has been done, it's not too late to consider connectivity in terms of wildlife crossings, either over or under these highways. Not ideal, and it should definitely be done before the fact, but in some cases, and certainly many parts of the peninsula, and if I can just mention one briefly, in Shah Alam, there's a forest called Bukit Charaka Forest Reserve, and there's a highway that goes straight through there. And so far, a dozen tapir have been killed there, and yet there are still some tapir remaining in the forest. And so I do hope that the authorities in Peninsular Malaysia will consider more wildlife crossings over existing highways.
I'm speaking to forestry researcher Dr. Lim Tek Win and wildlife biologist Dr. Wong Siew Tee on environmental conservation efforts in Malaysia in conjunction with World Wildlife Day. After the 8:30 a.m. news bulletin, we'll discuss how to improve federal-state cooperation for conservation. BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
You're listening to an extended edition of The Breakfast Grill in conjunction with World Wildlife Day, celebrated every year on March 3rd. With me on the show discussing efforts to conserve forests and wildlife are Dr. Lim Tek Win, Adjunct Professor of Ecology at the University of Nottingham, Malaysia, and Dr. Wong Siew Tee, Founder and CEO of the Bornean Sun Bear Conservation Centre in Sandakan, Sabah.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
You're listening to an extended edition of The Breakfast Grill in conjunction with World Wildlife Day, celebrated every year on March 3rd. With me on the show discussing efforts to conserve forests and wildlife are Dr. Lim Tek Win, Adjunct Professor of Ecology at the University of Nottingham, Malaysia, and Dr. Wong Siew Tee, Founder and CEO of the Bornean Sun Bear Conservation Centre in Sandakan, Sabah. Tekwin, you've lauded the National Forestry Policy in the past as a strong policy document, I believe. But I want to know, how cohesive is this policy with other policy documents and laws that we have? You know, is there cross-referencing with other federal and state laws, as well as the numerous blueprints and master plans that the government is so fond of drawing up? I mean, how effective can it be, given that we've got so many blueprints on the table?
All right, there's a plan called the National Physical Plan, and it's in its fourth iteration, just published in October last year. That's a very important plan, and it builds on the 50% pledge in front of policy. And even though it's called national, it only applies to Peninsula Malaysia. But one interesting thing that it has is a plan to reforest 50% of Peninsula Malaysia. And it mentions forest explicitly, not forest and tree cover, but forest. So that's definitely laudable, and it builds on national Malaysia forest policy. However, whether it will be put into practice is another thing, because it doesn't specify where the funding is going to come from. And so ultimately, it's going to be about money and getting in place a mechanism to make sure the states agree.
And that is the repeated mantra, right? That states have the prerogative over land matters, and hence that's why there's that federal-state tussle when it comes to what land should be categorized as forest reserves or not. What do you think is the best way to incentivize states to prioritize environmental conservation? And I'm curious from Wong's perspective, because I think Sabah does have a reputation for good conservation practices. What sets the state apart there?
Well, for Sabah, I think one thing for sure is that the Sabah's state forest policy is actually very strong. A few years ago, the Sabah State Forestry Department have pledged to keep 50%. This is like seriously 50% forest cover, not trees cover, in the states. And then 30% of those are to be totally protected forests. And that is a very good commitment by 2025. And right now they are at 26 or 27%. Of this forest cover as totally protected forest, means that, you know, there's no logging or no exploitation or whatever. Same with this, having the same status as the national parks and so on. And that is very, very good. Mm. And then, and of course, you know, followed by lots of actions. Say, for example, the anti-poaching team that they set up 2 years ago by the forestry department. That is very, very good. And then the state biodiversity policy. It seems like if, you know, everything is according to plan, things will become better. Mm-hmm. But the implementation, of course, is going to be challenged. Where is the money going to come from? It's going to be challenged. And hopefully, yeah, from the orang atasan, they are all on the same mind. You know, sometimes I feel like, you know, we need to like do the ecology 101, the environmental protection 101 in the parliament to educate all this legislature. Or this legislature to pass the law. And in fact, in Sabah, we have had this so-called the environmental court justice for wildlife. It's a workshop, you know, where all the judges are called to meet up with the chief judge of Sabah and Sarawak, Dato' Tan Sri Richard Malanjun. And then, so we give a lot of information to all the judges on and why we need to, like, you know, prosecute those people who poach, who breaks wildlife or environmental law. Mm. And then, you know, all of this, you know, a lot of information that we need to pass on, not only to general public, but also the orang atasan and very important people as well, I think.
Right. So it's just this continuous awareness and making sure those mechanisms and systems are in place to just keep reminding the powers that be of the importance of it. Tekwin, what about you? What are your thoughts? How best can we improve the federal-state cooperation in forestry conservation?
So I've mentioned it several times before, but there's this plan for an ecological fiscal transfer. At the moment, it's very small. It's only about 70 million in the federal budget. And mechanism, it does not specify how the states will be committed to perform. But I think that's the best avenue, best way forward, is to make that a binding commitment in exchange for some kind of funding, either that or the federal government could write off some of the existing debt that the state owes to the federal. Then that in exchange for increasing the area of the protected forest. I believe that must be the way forward. And the devil will be in the details, but as Wong mentioned, there are certain states which have got some excellent policies. One thing in Sabah in particular is that they have a policy for no net loss in biodiversity. That means that biodiversity values in the state must not deteriorate. And that's something that should be echoed throughout the other states. In fact, I think, as far as I'm aware, only Sabah and Selangor have set explicit targets for forest cover. Selangor's is only 30%. But all of the other states need to come in, commit to a target, and if it's not enough, then the federal government will need to step in with either carrot or stick to make sure that the overall Malaysian forest cover does not drop below 50% or is restored, depending on how you believe the current status is.
Gentlemen, it's been a fascinating conversation, and I know we've only touched the surface of the matter. I'd like to end with this question, in light of World Wildlife Day today. What keeps you going? Many people, myself included, feel a sense of helplessness over our lack of progress in combating climate change and conserving the environment. How do you stay motivated to keep up the good fight, even in the face of setbacks?
Me, you want to go first? Okay. Well, for me, I've been working with the Sundares for, 24 years now, and then working with wildlife conservations for more than 30 years. And I feel like, you know, because my work has been involving living in the forest and working in the forest, studying in the forest, I am in the forest. You know, the forest has become part of my life, part of my family, part of my home. You know, seeing the forest being locked up, all the majestic trees has been locked up, wildlife being poached is actually devastating, hurts my feeling. And therefore, I am like, I got no other second plan. I will continue to fight for wildlife. This is the best thing to do. And I found my Ikigai. If you know what Ikigai is, yeah, the four circle. Yeah, and I feel like, yeah, that's what more motivated me, especially and when I am a scientist, you know, I know more about this issue than anybody else. If not me who is dealing with this issue, I cannot expect other people to deal with this kind of issue because we know more about this. You know, therefore, the burden, the whatever, the pressure have to be on us, and we have to be the leader. We have to be put on the front line to fight for the thing that we love, wildlife and wild land, forest.
Tekwin, I'm giving you the last word.
All right. So Elon Musk is building a spaceship to go to Mars, but it's not ready yet. And before we have Mars as an option, the Earth is our only planet. It is our only. I plan to spend the rest of my life on this planet. And therefore, I really feel I have no choice but to look after it.
Wong, Tekwin, thank you very much for sharing insights into the important work that you do for the environment.
Yeah, thank you for the opportunity.
Yeah, it's a pleasure.
I've been speaking to Dr. Lim Tekwin, Adjunct Professor of Ecology at the University of Nottingham, Malaysia, and Dr. Wong Siew Tee, Founder and CEO of the Bornean Sunbear Conservation Centre in Sandakan, Sabah. This has been The Breakfast Grill on BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U-Mobile, unleashing unlimited potential every day.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.